Yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, or Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H.
Live and direct from the 509, from the Aibopo Studios, it's your boy, Joel, for another episode of the Global Citizen Podcast. And today I have a very special guest, not the first time he's been on, but it's the founder and director of Aibopo, JT Dumont. JT, welcome back to the Global Citizen Podcast.
Thank you, man. A pleasure.
The last time I had you on, you guys were just a blog, still making noise, and I was just a small podcast. Now you guys have blown up into blog, podcast, website, news force in Haiti, and I'm still just a small podcast, so I need to take notes from you at the end of this interview.
But you're making millions in DC.
Right. Well, look, we'll talk about that later. But thank you for coming back, man. I've been trying to talk to you for a minute. I feel like sometimes being a diaspora, I'll speak on behalf of the diaspora, or whatever people want to call us, we always look for a news source to really understand what's going on in Haiti, get the pulse, because there's always more than one story to everything. And for me, you guys are one of the leaders for me. Anytime you guys post anything, whether it be you posting something on Twitter, your shows on YouTube, or any of your articles that are in French, English, Creole, I follow and I really lean on that. So I want to thank you for that. But like, tell me what it's been like to go from kind of a small blog to kind of now a bit of a force in Haiti. I mean, I'm in your office now. I usually speak to your entire staff.
I think we met 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago, we took the decision to have to start with Aibo Studio. It wasn't called Aibo Studio yet. It wasn't. But we started selling the skills we've acquired in video editing, creating video content. So we started doing that, and one of the first projects we had was a project we had with Internews. It was after the hurricane.
Jean?
No, not Jean. Yeah, we have so much, so many hurricanes. So it was I forgot the name of the hurricane, but what happened is that we had a project on that where we created some short content, video content, on the aftermath and on what to do or what people should do after a hurricane. And it worked very well. And then since that year, it was in 2017, that's when we first talked. We were kind of in a limbo where we were an open platform, a participative blog. But we wanted to start having a journalistic team. So we started very small, with three people. It was, we started this project. Ralph Thomasin was the director of information. I don't know how you call this in English, but he manages all the journalistic part. We started this, we were just two, and then we added Wendy to the team for video editing, for animation, because we knew that we wanted to make videos and add the animated component to it. So when we decided that, it was around June. So it took us 4 months, around June to 2017.
Okay.
And then when we decided that, we decided we wanted to do that, so we need to find a team. So the first thing was that we wanted to start very, very small. So we found two journalists, full-time journalists, and we were three people. It was me, Ralph, and Wendy. And we started like this, we were five. And in September, we closed the deal with the owners of this place, location, yeah. This location that you're in. So in September 2017. But we didn't start in September. Because in September, we went to a program and we went to Belgium, where we spent a month and a half, about a month, working, each of us in a media. Each of us were in a different media where we would interact with them and try to understand how things are done. So it was a very interesting experience. And then when we got back, we started to get this ready, and then we started to work on November. So the time between when we told ourselves, yes, we want to do that. Maybe I think it was around the time that I talked to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we decided to go for it, and then when we started, it was a weird time because we wanted to act as if we had a place, but we didn't have a place. We were making a lot of videos. We were making a lot of videos, a lot of content, but it was hard for us to meet and work. So when we finally got the place, things really changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's always easier when you have an office space, a headquarters.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So now we have five journalists, two video editors, including Wendy, Ralph, me, and Fania. Fania was the... What up, Fania? Fania was not here, but she
shout
came,
out to Fania.
She came last May. She joined the team, and she manages everything that is strategic to us as business wise. So yeah, that's about it. That's about it.
So you guys have been in full operation for about 2 years now. What is your guys' relationship with the media in general in Haiti? I mean, you guys are still are media, but I think this is a new form of media.
Yeah,
this is a new form, I would assume, to Haiti, but I think globally as well, a place that can diffuse stories in various forms, whether it's, you know, long reads online or videos. But what's your relationship, IUO Post relationship with the media in Haiti?
It depends. We have some type of relationship, especially with it's hard to answer. There's mostly individual. We have good relationship with a lot of individuals that are part of the media, with who we collaborate. Sometimes when we have projects, we call other people from other media to take part of it. When we have international journalists that come and give a workshop, we invite other people. But as institution to institution, we don't really have partnerships yet. The only thing that came close to partnership, it's with Tele Caraïbe, which was the only TV station that contacted us to use the content that we created. A lot of TV station in Haiti use our content, but they just download it and use it however they want. So they're the only media that contacted us and asked us to use, especially the show that we have, En Lien.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
En Lien. So they asked us, and maybe that's the only sort of partnership that we have, but it's nothing written. It's just that we agreed on it, and it was okay. But it's the media in Haiti. It's the most the big guy, the big player is the radio,
mm-hmm.
and most people that manage radios are from another generation.
So they're old.
That's what I want to say. So they're old, so we don't have a lot of connection with, right. with that. And for newspapers, there's two left in Haiti. There's only Le National and Nouvelliste. Le Nationaliste is almost inexistent. The Nouvelliste is the only one who has was really heavy still. So it's a weird time in media. I think it's a weird time in media. It's a very weird time.
I agree. Where would you say kind of your the age of your audience is?
Oh, the age of our audience, the big chunk, it's between 21 and 34 years old.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, that's what. Google Analytics.
Well, Google, I'm 36. Get up on it. Talking about your show that I think is real popular online, Unlia. I mean, I find it hilarious, and I know a lot of people who share the links with me find it hilarious. But the people who we're laughing at might not find it that funny. Have you gotten backlash from them? Because the people... I mean, what's so great about that show is that it's taking kind of real sad things that are happening in Haiti in terms of corruption and catastrophe and poverty, but spinning it to us in a way that it's very real, but you have to laugh at it. Have you gotten kind of, has Aiba Boys gotten kind of pushback from that crowd?
Yeah. It's just so that people can understand. It's basically what Jon Stewart has been doing in the States for a while. What, I don't know who else is doing that
right now. It's Trevor Noah.
And so it's satire.
Stephen Colbert.
It's satire, and so it's very fun. We haven't had any backlash as dangerous backlash,
right. But
we've had call from politician or businessmen who called us and told us though, this is not fair, you should not do that, but usually we just don't care.
Right.
Because what's fun about it is that most often it's backed by videos.
Mm-hmm. Where it's showing.
It's showing you saying the thing, saying what you're contesting.
Yeah.
So it's not a big headache for us.
Right.
It's not a big headache for us. So, and Gael is, since Gael is very, not only she's smart, but she has a very attractive personality where it's very hard to hate her.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So even the people she's getting at, she's laughing at, even those people have some type of, I would say, they admire her. There is that too, and it plays good that she's a woman. I think it's very good that she's a woman, because I think if it was a man, it would have been a little more conflictual. But
perhaps, but I think it's one of the more powerful things too that you have a woman really giving you the news, but in a way that softens you, but also shocks you at the same time. So Gael, for listeners, is the host of Anuia.
Yeah, bien aimé.
Shout out to her.
So Trevor Noah's a woman.
Like. Yeah, there you go. So I would say in the past, there's always something going on in Haiti, but I would say in the past, 18 months, I feel like politically, Haiti has been going through a lot.
Yeah.
You've had the Petro Caribe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Petro Caribe, for those who don't know, it is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a fund that was given by Venezuela to a number of Caribbean countries where they were going to use the funds to basically uplift the economy, do a lot of things in terms of public and social service. It was like $8 billion.
For Haiti, it was around $4 billion. The last estimate that came out from the last report that the Department of Justice did, it was $4 billion that.
So,
but it wasn't given in cash.
Mm-hmm.
It was given in oil.
Okay, yeah.
So it was given in oil, so it wasn't cash. So basically, Venezuela gave the oil at a reduced price.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the government sells it, the huge benefits it the government makes on the oil, they can use it to fund social projects,
right,
and develop everything related to developing the country.
So right, anything related to developing the country for the betterment of the country and
exactly,
its people.
Yeah.
And then that went missing. And
most of it went it went missing in the sense that there was a lot of projects that were said to be funded by it, and the projects we could not find them, or
right,
when we found them, we realized that the cost of this project were not
equal
to $4 billion exactly.
So you had that, and then which led to protests, peaceful protests.
Uh-huh.
And then in July, there were a set of violent protests,
yeah,
that really shook the country. And most recently, was it mid-February?
Yeah.
There was...
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, there was protests for 10 days where, similar to the July ones, but longer.
Longer, yeah. And more political this time. So the July one, the one in July, the protests at the beginning of July I think it was very driven by the people being fed up.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was, it was, of course, the people were fed up, but it had more of it was very influenced by politics too. One that we just had
recently had, yeah,
because it has become very political. So it's not only, of course, people have they have issues that they want the government to solve, or they want the government to give them the opportunity to solve them. But also, the opposition parties are using this to try to get to the government, a
right,
government that they're opposed to.
Right.
So. It's a mixture of corruption, of the Haitian people are fed up with the rampant corruption in the government. That's first, and second, you have inflation. People, the cost of living has risen a lot.
Definitely has. For one U.S. dollar, it's 80 good, which
yeah,
is like $16.
It's Haitian dollars,
Haitian,
you want to say? Yeah,
yeah.
But 80 good. So you have inflation, plus you have the currency that is devaluating,
right,
at a rate that we've never seen before. So when was the last time you came in Haiti?
So I was here last May.
In May.
Yeah,
in May
2018.
In May.
Yeah.
The exchange rate was 62 goods.
Right.
So now, 8 months after, it's 80. It's around 80.
Right.
So if you take 20 out of 60, that's around 30% loss,
right,
of value of the good,
right,
in less than a year.
Less than a calendar year.
Yep. So that's crazy.
It is crazy. But if you could explain to me, so I mean, I don't want to be the voice for people abroad, but I think a lot of us, and I follow a lot of Haitian pages on social media, shout out to Welcome to Haiti, where people ask a lot of questions on why is what's happening in terms of protests, in terms of destruction of property, widespread protests. Everybody, you know, anyone who's grown up Haitian has always heard five different stories,
yeah,
5 to 10 different stories. But from you guys, from your guys' vantage point.
Me, personally,
mm-hmm,
there's two bases for that. There's two words. It's maybe three words because one of them has two words in it. First, it's social justice. There's
uh-huh,
no social justice in the country. And then the second is corruption.
Yeah.
So everything that's been happening in Haiti for the past 30 years is related to that, to these two things.
Yeah.
Social justice, there's no social justice, and then there's corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Either it's in the government or the private sector, there's corruption everywhere.
Yeah.
From the most important person of the country, the president, whose name has been cited in the latest PetroCaribe report, to the regular guy working at any government agency. So it's corruption. Corruption is killing the country, and it's starting to drive the people crazy. Because I think only now Haitians are realizing that the cost of corruption has a direct impact on their everyday life.
Right.
So only now I think Haitians understand that when the government is wasting money on buying expensive cars, expensive houses, they understand that no, this money should have been
for us
in our education, in our health system. So in our healthcare system, it's these two things, man. It's corruption and social justice. And when you're in Haiti, you can see that Haiti's and there's so much injustice in Haiti. When you look at the concentration of wealth, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know that people in the States are talking about the concentration of wealth right now, that the 1% have, I don't know, 40% of the wealth.
yeah.
But in Haiti, it's even worse.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad in Haiti. And even me myself, you know, driving around, whether it's just my parents or family, and you know, I know how hard everyone works.
Yeah.
But you look around the disparity, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it makes my problems seem very minuscule.
Oh, you have problems?
I got some problems in the States. You know what I mean? but you know, I think it's always humbling. When I'm here, for me at least, it's always humbling. It's always great to hang out and be with family, but then just kind of see things. And even me, as someone who doesn't live here full time, like I came here as a summers as a kid, and I lived here for a few years, but just to see the difference each time. Do you think that? I mean, I feel that. First, let me make the statement, and then you can tell me if I'm wrong or not. But that a lot of Haitians just kind of adapt to change.
Oh yes, that's
too much.
That's why we survive.
Yes,
it's because we adapt. But it's I think our capacity to adapt at the same time it saves us, so we can survive. We live our life. We adapt, but also the same aptitude that we have to adapt is the one that is killing us too, because we get comfortable in any sort of situation. That's why you see I have a lot of friends. As long as you can provide some comfort to your family and your surrounding, you can see that people are not really concerned about the real problem of the country. They're like, it's other people protesting, it's their problem. As long as we find our little perimeter of comfort,
your little paradise.
You create your own bubble, and then you live in it, and that's adapting. That's adapting, and it's the most dangerous thing, especially for people in Haiti that had the chance to have a certain type of education, and also have the chance to have some economic power.
Right.
You know?
One of the things in one of the Anuia episodes, when she was saying Jennifer, blah, blah, she was saying that what's going to happen is that at some point the protesters are going to be in your living room, and then you're going to have to deal with it head on. And I think that's a fear in the back of everybody's mind.
Yes. It's a big problem for the middle class in Haiti to understand that the poor people's problem is closely related to all the problem they have to function, to evolve themselves. It's a huge problem. So the power of this show that Gael did, it was a waking call for the class moyen, the middle class, to understand that, hey, it's kind of our problem too. If we don't try to fix it, eventually they're gonna explode our bubbles.
Yeah.
So it's either we fix that
or the bubble exploded. Yes,
when the people, I don't remember who said that, when the people find nothing to eat, they'll eat
whatever's in your plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think? I mean, what are, you know, everyone keeps saying that they don't know how to solve Haiti's problems. I mean, what would you say are the three main things that can be done? I mean, there's probably more than three, but like if there could only be three, if you had a genie and you rub the bottle.
If I had to?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a hard question, but there's this misconception. I think first, education. You always have to go with it. You can't go wrong with it.
Yeah. Because
you need that in order to prosper in any other area.
Right.
Whatever you're doing, you need good education to prosper in any other area. It's the first thing you need to look at to solve a long term problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. Education is going to solve a long term problem. And then I think people have this tendency to forget that agriculture is very important in Haiti. You still have 40% of the population who lives in rural areas. That was 70% like not long ago. So you have a huge transfer that is happening. If you don't, the reason why agriculture is important, it's not only to feed yourself, but it's also to not having the explosion you're about to have in the cities. Like a city like Port-au-Prince, if you keep having people coming and coming and coming and coming, at some point Port-au-Prince is gonna explode.
Yeah.
People are
everywhere.
And they're coming, it's because there's no opportunity, there's no investment outside of in the rural areas. And the first way to do that, to give people job, to give them, it's you need to invest in agriculture. You need to invest in the rural areas. And I think agriculture is the first people living in rural areas will benefit a lot from that. And the second, maybe agriculture should have been the third one. And to me, the second, and the reason why it's not the first, it's because I need to say education. I needed to say it, you know, to not look bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's justice.
Yeah.
It's justice. Like, there is no society, there is no group of people that can properly function without rules. We need to have rules.
Yeah.
We need to reinforce the right, the rules related to the community, to this village. And it's not happening in Haiti. It's not happening in Haiti. We don't have a justice system. We don't have it. People do whatever they want and they don't feel like they're accountable for it. That's why you have corruption. That's why when you came here, you had a cabinet that stopped right in front of you.
Right.
And you could not say anything.
Nothing.
That's why last night I could not sleep. I had somebody close to my house playing music at 3 a.m. And it goes all the way. Justice is so important to make a village work. Justice. Us having rules that we agree on.
Right.
That we agree on these rules.
Yeah.
And then we go by them. We accept that the little village that we have is regulated by these rules. And we just don't have that. And we need that.
Mm. One last question for you before I ask you to plug everything that Aibu Post does. I work a lot in Africa, and I would say that my training ground has been here. I feel like being from here and being able to be here, has anything I see, I'm just like, whatever, been there, done that. But in certain countries in Africa, they have dictators. Well, let me put it this way. In some of the countries that quote unquote work in Africa, they have dictators. Some call them brutal, some call them benevolent. Do you think, what kind of leader do you think Haiti needs? Or do you think that also democracy works in Haiti?
So, 6 months ago, we from time to time we do Aibo talks here. Yeah. Where we invite people to talk. 6 months ago, or 7 months ago, we invited the former CEO of Digicel, Selorm Adadevo. And now he's the CEO of Ghana's most important cell phone company. I forgot the name, but he's the CEO of the most important.
Okay.
Yeah.
And shout out to him.
Yeah, he's a very cool guy. And we asked him that question, and he was like, it's hard to say that, but there's no correlation between the type of government you're having and the economic and being prosperous economically. Mm. So basically, you can have a dictator and having a country that works well. It's very hard for people in the Western world to hear that. Even for me, it's hard because I was raised that democracy is the most important thing ever.
Democracy!
But when you're looking at some countries in Africa that have some sort of democracy, like when you think about Rwanda, it's not democracy.
No,
it's definitely not democracy because that motherfucker does whatever he wants. Where he, you know?
Yes.
I don't know if I can curse.
You can curse all you want.
You sure?
Fuckity fuck fuck fuck. Ah!
So personally, I think in the Haitian, in our culture, democracy is not at odds with our culture. We're a culture based on some sort of libertarian ideals. So we value liberty a lot. And when you have a people that value liberty a lot, you need to have democracy.
Right.
But democracy doesn't mean that you can do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Right.
You need to have you need to have justice reinforced. You need to have a system that makes sense for the country and the people and the resources that you have. I think. Even if it's in a democratic format, I think in Haiti to get out of the situation we're in, we'll have to have some people in power that some group in power that reinforce stuff, and sometimes reinforcing stuff means to not care about the UN coming and saying
no, you
cannot do this, you need to do it like this, or having the World Bank coming and you have to do it like this. Because if you have long-term plans and you want to achieve them, on the short term you need to take radical decisions.
Yeah.
And radical decisions to be implemented, you have to shake the current system that is here, and to do it, you have to have people having power and using it. I'm not pro dictatorship. We tried dictatorship; it didn't work. I know that a lot of people say that the Duvalier years were good. That's
the golden years.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you look at the economic stats, you're like, okay, it was maybe great for some people that work in the government that benefited from it. And okay, maybe there wasn't that much people in Port-au-Prince, but in general, as a country, the country was as bad. So I'm not definitely not for dictatorship, but we need to find a system that works for us. We don't need to be Great Britain. We don't need to be Great Britain. We need to find whatever works for our culture, whatever works for the resources that we have, whatever works for the area, the geopolitical area that we're in, we need to consider it too. Whether we're gonna be inspired by Latin America or brothers in the Caribbean, we need to find it. But I don't think we need to have a system that, because we read it in a book and we're like, okay, it's the perfect, that's what the book says, and yeah, we need to go by it. I think we need to be more open, creative, with that, more creative, and we need to take into account our culture.
Absolutely. Vitti, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Please plug everything you want to plug for Aibopos.
Our website is aibopos.com. It's AYIBOPOST.com. Follow us on Twitter. It's Aibopos. Follow us on Facebook. It's Aibopos. Follow us on YouTube. We create a lot of cool videos. This year, we're going to have a lot of new... This year, we're already in
March. Jesus Christ.
Yes, we're having a lot of new cool formats coming out. And so follow us. We're trying to make cool stuff, even though sometimes it comes out very whack.
False. But thanks again, man. And hopefully we'll be in touch again. And next time I come here, we'll...
am I your first second one?
No, you're not my first second one. All my friends have been on like 5 times. But bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
A pleasure.
Check us out on Spotify, iTunes. Peace.
Relax yourself, girl, be set playing. Relax yourself, girl, be set playing.
Hey, yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam. That's